This is NASA Student Opportunities, a podcast connecting high school and college students with learning opportunities inside America's Space Agency. Episode 34, October 10th, 2007. I'm Dina Nunley. NASA's Reduced Gravity Student Flight Opportunities Project offers college students the opportunity to propose, design, build, fly, and evaluate a reduced gravity experiment. The deadline for proposals to be considered for flights in 2008 is October 31, 2007. Students and their experiments fly approximately 30 parabolic maneuvers in a roller coaster fashion over the Gulf of Mexico on NASA's Weightless Wonder. Each hairpin maneuver provides about 30 seconds of hypergravity, followed by about 25 seconds of microgravity. You can get details by following the link in this week's show notes. Go to www.nasa.gov/podcast and click on the NASA Student Opportunities podcast. This week, we get to hear the story of Latasha Taylor, a student who emerged from the inner city of Memphis, Tennessee, to land a job this year as a space systems engineer with a major aerospace company. Her role model is Mae Jemison, the first African-American female astronaut, and she hopes to someday become an astronaut too. Latasha participated in a lot of NASA learning opportunities along the way, and she'll share those experiences with us. Her undergraduate degree is from Tennessee State University, a bachelor's in aeronautical and industrial engineering with a minor in biology. And she graduated this year from the University of Washington with a master's degree in technical communication with a concentration in user-centered design. Latasha, it's interesting that you combined technical communication with your studies in engineering and biology.
Right. When you're thinking about space applications, sure, you have your robotics engineers, you have your mechanical engineers, electrical, but then you also have your geologists, you know, your biologists that are working together to create, you know, different space applications for exploration. And so you have all of these people working together from different technical backgrounds. And it's important to be able to know how to communicate between these entities and communicate well. And you have to be able to write well, and you have to be able to speak well and articulate. And that's something maybe, you know, traditional engineering programs overlook. And so when I got to the University of Washington and saw that they had the technical communication department within the College of Engineering, I really became interested. And so with usability, it goes even a step further, and it can be summed up as like engineering design with the human in mind. So we're not only looking at, okay, does a product work? Does the product get the job done? But what type of experience is the user having as they complete a certain task using that product? Is it enhancing the user experience? Is it an enhancement to the user, you know, after they've completed their task? Are they saying, well, I finished what I had to do, but I hated every second of it? Or are they saying, wow, you know, I was able to use this product to complete this task, and actually I understood it. It was intuitive, it was user-friendly, and it worked. And so when you think about space applications, that's very important because, for instance, one of my internships at NASA Ames actually was with cockpit design, and it could apply, of course, to either aeronautics or aerospace. When you're thinking about the spacecraft cockpit or you're thinking about the cockpit of an airplane, you have all these buttons and different operating systems that have to go in a cockpit in order for it to work properly. And so if you look at the pilot and you think about what their needs are, then you can have a more intuitive system, and you can have a system that's designed properly. And so I never forget that internship, just really learning the difference between designing a good product and designing a great product. I remember having pilots come in and just test the system that we had developed based off what we thought they needed. Because, you know, we know because we're the designers, and pilots, you know, they don't know. That's kind of our hypothesis at first. You know, we know what's best because we're the designers. But then the second time we designed it, we said, okay, the pilots are the ones that have to use this. They know what's best for them. You know, they know where they would like to see buttons. They're the ones that are in the stressful situation. Let's interview them. Let's talk with them to see what they think would be best. And so We did that, and you wouldn't believe the difference. I mean, just actually taking the time, the effort to say, we're going to incorporate the ideas of the user into this design, and it enhances it greatly.
As students are considering technical fields, they're considering getting involved with NASA, and you look at the new direction that NASA's going with the vision for space exploration, what type of advice would you offer to students, especially in light of the fact that you have such a passion for the technical communication piece, for the human factors piece of this?
I would tell them not to limit themselves at all. I mean, not only academically, don't limit yourself, but don't limit yourself with your aspirations. I mean, so academically, don't limit yourself when it comes to majors. Don't say, oh, you know, I'm a traditional engineer, so I must just stick with the traditional engineering, you know. If you see even new fields within engineering or new components of engineering in the academic realm that may not be so traditional, that you may not have heard of or you may not be sure of, go ahead, give it a try. See how that can complement your current skills, and don't be afraid to try it because you never know. I mean, engineering, it should be diverse. Engineering should bring in different components to make it better. So that would kind of be my idea. It's just like, don't be afraid to step out there, even in academics, and enhance your academic experience by gathering insight from different fields. I always say it's not necessarily going beyond the box or going outside of the box. Why does it have to be a box in the first place? That's always been my question, you know. What is this box thing anyway? Remove the box, you know. Not only go outside it, but remove it. And so I think that's what I've done academically. I think that's what I've done through research. My research spans so far, I mean, not only within NASA, but with Boeing. And my research as a graduate student and undergraduate student, I mean, you look at my resume and people are like, wow, you know, so what is it that you want to do? I actually want to do it all, or I want to have a hand in it all. I want to say, wow, I understand this and I understand that. And that is where the technical communication comes in. Because I have such a, you know, deep understanding of all of these systems and how they work together, then I can kind of jump from this station to that station and be effective and speak their language, their terminology. That's made me a more well-rounded engineer. That's made me a better engineer because now I approach engineering from such a dynamic perspective, such a well-rounded perspective.
What influenced your college and career choices?
I think the first real space niche that I had to form was a result of reading about Mae Jemison. As a young kid, my mom would buy African-American books on different famous African-Americans, and we would read them all the time. And then she got the book on Mae Jemison. I just remember standing there looking at the cover for the longest because it has her picture of her in her astronaut suit with her helmet by her side and like a picture of the moon in the back or something. And I was just standing there looking at it like, wow. And then when I began to read it and read her story and just began to read everything, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do, that I had to make an impact. The impact that she had on me just by reading that book and sharing her life story and her journey, I knew that I wanted to have that same impact on somebody else. And so I said, man, this would be really cool to be an astronaut. So that was kind of my first encounter, just looking at what somebody else had done. And then when I got to the ninth grade, my mom works at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and this is kind of how I got into the biology part, but a group of people were walking, and they were all males. They just looked really important. I said, Mom, who are those people over there? She's like, oh, that's a group of biomedical engineers that come into the hospital, and they work with a lot of the prosthetics for the kids that need those things, fake arms, fake legs. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. But why aren't there any women in that group? Why aren't there any minorities? And from that moment on, I knew I wanted to change things from that perspective, too. I think the next major turning point was my sophomore year in undergrad when I was at Tennessee State University. And this was shortly after the discovery of the first extrasolar planet. And a lot of people don't know, but Tennessee State had a major role in that. At that point, NASA donated quite a bit of money to Tennessee State to get like a astrobiology program going and for undergrad students, a research program. And so I, at that point, was asked if I wanted to take advantage of that summer research opportunity. And I said, yeah, sure. I've always had this little secret passion for space exploration and stuff, and I would love to be a part of this. And so I was selected as one of the research students that started that summer, and then it carried on into the school year, and then it just gathered from there. I mean, it became this real passion for me just by one opportunity from NASA.
So you were in college when you became involved with NASA.
And it's sad that I had to wait till my sophomore year of undergrad to even have this exposure. But then sometimes that's just how it is. But when the opportunity presents itself, you can't say, well, this opportunity came so late in my career, because, I mean, here I am a sophomore. But you just really say, you know, this opportunity is here, and I'm going to take advantage of it. You know, it's not too late, even though I'm just hearing about this field, even though I'm just being presented with these opportunities to work at NASA centers, it's still an opportunity. And opportunities don't have time dates stamped on them or anything like that. It's not restricted by time. Oh, it's an opportunity, but it's an opportunity that came your sophomore year. No, it's still an opportunity. And so for me, I saw it as such, and I reacted to it, and I really took action to make that opportunity a reality, to make the transition from opportunity to reality, opportunity to passion, opportunity to advancement, all those things. The factor, though, is you, you know. You're the one that has to make that transition. And so I did. I took advantage of that opportunity, and I said, okay, this is for me. I grabbed hold of it, and I completed the research program, and then the next big opportunity came through NASA, being able to do the KC-135 and have that microgravity experience. And we were actually the first HBCU to ever be selected as a team, and we were the first team from Tennessee State University to ever be selected. So that was just an honor, and here I am, finally doing the things that I read about in Mae Jemison's book, how she was the first to do so many things as an African-American woman. And to me, that was just amazing to see that box being removed, as I mentioned time and time again, removing that box. Who says that there is a box that restrains minorities or restrains women or from doing space things? There is no box. In undergrad, I also had the opportunity to do a individual project entitled Inflatable Solar Arrays in Astrobiology. I did this project and submitted this proposal to a NASA conference, NASA Astrobiology Institute conference, and I won first place for undergrad, for the undergraduate division. And I was like, wow, this was kind of like my first real project that I had done with NASA. And so I won first place, and all the people come and see the first place winners, of course, and so two very important people came by my poster to see it. One was Woody Sullivan from University of Washington Astrobiology Program, and the other was Juan Perez he was the director of the Centro de Astrobiología in Madrid, Spain. And so Woody said, wow, you know, this is great. We would love to have you come to University of Washington and enroll in our graduate program. And then Juan Perez Mercader actually said, you know, I got to have this type of innovation at my center. You got to come for a summer and work. Because he really liked the way that I had incorporated both engineering and science into my research and into my academic journey. So I said, okay, sure, I'll come out. I don't mind. And this was actually my first time out of the country at all, and I went to Madrid. I went during the summer of 2003 as well, but I had to cut my trip short because I had to come back and do the KC-135. But I did so much that summer that basically it gave me enough confidence. And all it takes is that one opportunity to give you that confidence. But that summer, I did the KC-135. I had the opportunity to intern in Madrid, Spain, under the director. And in Madrid, I worked on the Marte project, basically the Mars drilling project. And so what it was they were going to drill at the at the polar caps of Mars, looking for, of course, life at the ice caps. And so not only did I do the KC-135 for 2 weeks in Houston, not only did I spend a month in Madrid, Spain, but I also got sent to NASA Ames to work on the other component of the MARTE project, because the PI for the MARTE project was actually at NASA Ames, even though the Centro de Astrobiología was a major part of that, even though they were working on a component, but the PI was at NASA Ames. So it's amazing to see how a project comes together. And how that was my first real experience of like, okay, so at this center, they're working on the drilling part, but maybe at this center, they're working on the sample collection part and the sample analyzing part. And so to be able to work under the PI at one place and then to be able to work on the main center responsible for the design and then to put all those together and then have that experience with KC-135, it was just an amazing summer. That really solidified for me that I was going to be an astronaut, that I was going to be an aerospace engineer.
And were you also selected for the spaceward-bound Mars Desert Research Station?
That experience was a true wake-up call for me when it comes to the skills and the resilience needed to be an astronaut. It's just like a real astronaut mission because it's like pulling people from these different backgrounds, which is really appealing to me because I love meeting people from different areas and working with them. I mean, we're all strangers. So 6 of us selected to work on this team and work on this mission and complete this goal. And it really gave us an idea of what Mars would be like. And it gave us an idea of what it would be like to be a Mars astronaut, to be an astronaut that gets the opportunity to go to Mars. And so we would go out on our excursions in full sim, what we call sim, in sim, where we would just have our suits on and our water packs, and we would have our GPS systems. And we would have our radios where we could talk back and forth to each other. And then we got around using ATVs, the all-terrain vehicles, which were like our rovers. And our rovers would take us around, and we would have to go. It was almost like a Mars obstacle course. I mean, we had to go up and over rough terrain, and we really had to look out for each other. It became like a family, you know, like an astronaut family.
Would you like to share any closing thoughts as you start your career as a space systems engineer and reflect on your experiences and achievements?
It's amazing when you can kind of look back. And, of course, at that time, you don't really see the outcome. You just know that something great is going to happen. And that's the attitude that I had, and that's what really put me through. I mean, it's the fact that something great is going to happen. You have to keep that mindset. You don't know what, you're not sure what, but you know. And you know that what you're doing is a little risky, but something great is going to happen because you're in your passion. You know, you're doing what you desire. When I started my graduate career at the University of Washington, I was the first African-American woman to enroll in both engineering and astrobiology, which to me was another milestone in keeping in the back of my mind Mae Jemison and the things that she's done. That was a great accomplishment, and being one of the first African-American women to do that. And so that sums up pretty much my journey from as young as maybe the third grade, reading that book about Mae Jemison, all the way up to here I am now with my master's degree and looking back and saying, wow, it was so possible, you know, and I don't regret any part of it.
Latasha Taylor says she plans to enroll in a doctoral program within the next couple of years. If you'd like to know more about the project she described, go to www.nasa.gov/podcast. Click on the NASA Student Opportunities podcast and follow the links in our show notes. We want to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about NASA learning opportunities, send an email to educationpodcast@nasa.gov. Thanks for listening. NASA Student Opportunities is a podcast production of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration.